Hello. In my last lecture, I talked about the rise of the great Maya urban centers of the mid-first millennium AD. And I used as examples two centers, Tikal and Palenque. Now, what I want to emphasize is that these are not in some sense representative of all of Maya urbanism or Maya elite culture. These were only two of a number of competing political centers. And indeed, there seems to have been considerable cultural diversity even within this regional Mayan civilization. And this is actually quite useful because we need to think in a sense of civilization as embodying a number of different spatial and cultural levels. For example, Tikal and Palenque are themselves distinctive in a variety of different ways. They had their own history. They had their own elite culture that differed one from the other and from the elite culture of other Maya centers. This is certainly significant, but this distinctiveness is itself embedded within a larger Mayan civilization, united by language, by architecture, by writing, by political practice. And that Maya civilization itself is yet again embedded within an even larger scale Mesoamerican civilization that unites elites across space and through time, not as some sort of static, unchanging entity, but as a dynamic, developing cultural and political process that we can probably trace from the Olmec and their contemporaries at the end of the first millennium BC, down perhaps to the Aztec at the time of the coming of the Spanish. A long period of time. And as I said, not a static culture, but one developing where we can see common threads existing through time. So what I want to talk about today is Maya writing and the sorts of things that we can tell from Maya writing. And I'm going to do this for a fairly specific reason. I'm going to concentrate on this a little more than perhaps I've done in some other cases, because of what I see as a real transformation in archaeological views of the Maya over the last few decades, a transformation that is, to a great extent, due to advances in our understanding of Maya script. Let me go back to an episode I mentioned in my last lecture to use as an illustration. The earliest dated stela at Tikal, one of the greatest of Maya sites, dates to AD 292. After this time, epigraphers working at Tikal, can begin to identify individuals and even dynasties. And of course, the particular events that happened in particular years, down in many cases to the year. For example, the Tikal ruler, Chaktaqechaq, translated Great Jaguar Paw. He's named for the features of his identification glyph, as are most Mayan rulers. I will note that I'll use the translations. If there are any Maya speakers in my audience, I'll apologize for my pronunciation in advance. Great Jaguar Paw is identified on a stela dated to AD 376, and he's stepping on a bound captive in this stela. Now, Great Jaguar Paw died 2 years later, at the same time to the day that a leader called Siakak, Fire is Born, is commemorated on a stela in the city of Tikal, in the same city, to the day. This makes it look very much as if Fire is Born deposed and killed Great Jaguar Pa. Now, what makes this episode particularly interesting is that Fire is Born seems to have connections with Teotihuacan. A strong Teotihuacan influence on Tikal has been identified for earlier periods as well, especially in artwork on the site. However, AD 378, this year, when Fire is Born is commemorated for the first time in Astila, AD 378 seems to be a turning point. So this ruler, Fire is Born, arranged the ascension of another ruler, Nun Yaksh Ayin, or Curl Snout. Again, that's his identification glyph, Curl Snout, to the throne of Tikal. Curl Snout is in turn identified as the son of another individual, and that individual is named Atlatl-Kawak. This is translated as Spear-Thrower Owl. Spear-Thrower Owl is also referred to on a number of other Mayan inscriptions. And he may, in fact, have been a ruler of Teotihuacan, who extended some form of domination over a number of Mayan centers in the 4th century AD. It's ironic that in some ways we know more about Teotihuacan rulers from the Maya than we do from the site of Teotihuacan itself. So Spear Thrower Owl's son, Curl Snout, seems to have been responsible for a real intrusion of Teotihuacan elite culture into Tikal, especially in the kind of ritual and political imagery portrayed on artwork. Curl Snout's son, Siaj Chan Kawil, or Stormy Sky, ascended to the throne of Tikal in AD 411 and continued a policy of Teotihuacan influence and connections. Now, that Teotihuacan influence might be visible on the iconography, on the artwork, on the monumental architecture that we find at Tikal. But without the evidence offered by Maya glyphs, by Maya writing, in the form of the propaganda so energetically disseminated by Maya rulers, we know far, far less about the political history of the region. The transformation in our understanding of that political history, specifically of the Maya, but more generally, as Maya elites spoke about other areas of Mesoamerica, the transformation in our understanding of the political history of this region over the last 40 years has been nothing less than extraordinary, and the field continues to develop very quickly indeed. For much of the early 20th century, archaeologists and epigraphers, those specialists in ancient writing systems, viewed Maya civilization as a peaceful, non-urban culture dominated by priest kings who were obsessed by calendars and astronomy. And you still see, to some degree, we still see echoes of this view, which is a pretty misleading view of Maya culture today. In large part, this view of priests, kings, and astronomy was due to the way in which progress in the deciphering of Maya writing system occurred. Because the numerical system, the number system, and the calendar system were the first elements of the Maya writing system to be deciphered, to be understood by archaeologists and epigraphers. Now, that's actually quite understandable. It makes sense. Number systems and calendars are directly tied to the natural world in a way that many other elements of culture, many other elements of a writing system, probably will not be. So it's understandable that they were deciphered first. In addition, we do know that different calendars were, in fact, vital to Mayan ideology and worldview. So this view of the Mayan interest in calendars and astronomy was not wrong, because such topics, views of the cosmos, views of the calendar, provided a way of understanding both the history of the world and the ways in which gods and other supernatural forces articulated with the worlds of humans. So these were not misunderstandings in and of themselves of Mayan interests in calendars and astronomy, but they were, however, radically incomplete. Because Mayan writing systems did far more than just talk about calendars and about the heavens. And further progress in understanding Mayan texts, for the most part monumental inscriptions on stone, as well as a small number of codices written on bark paper, has since the 1970s really transformed our understanding of Maya political and social systems. And here I would have to remark upon work by archaeologists and epigraphers like Linda Sheely, Peter Matthews, and a whole variety of other people. This has been the fruits of the labor and genius of a variety of very, very committed and intelligent people. It became obvious, it has become obvious since the 1970s, that these Mayan texts also recorded important events in Mayan political relationships and in Mayan history, beyond looking at the calendar astronomy. The histories of different Mayan urban centers, the lives of their rulers, sometimes their deaths, battles between different political units, and the dynastic alliances and competitions and marriages and agreements that Mayan elites engaged in. These translations have revealed a sequence of wars, alliances, dynastic struggles, and competitions for ritual and political primacy between Maya city-states just as complex and just as bloody as in any period of European or world history. Now we know that. What do we know then about the history of writing systems in Mesoamerica? Can we place this development of writing among the Maya in a wider context? Because in some ways it's relatively within this broader Mesoamerican civilization, the question becomes, what is the role specifically of Maya writing, and what connections, what relationships can we see to other areas? It seems increasingly likely that some limited use of script existed among Olmec populations. The chief question is, what did that script do? What was its purpose? And when did it develop? What were its characteristics? One very recent and quite controversial candidate for the earliest writing in the New World is what's known as the Cascajal block. This block of serpentine, a stone distantly related to resembling jade, this block of serpentine was found near San Lorenzo in Olmec territory in the course of rock quarrying for modern building purposes. And so this fortuitous discovery of the Cascajal block meant that, unfortunately, its original location in the earth was lost. Now the problem is, I mean, it's wonderful to have this artifact, but the problem is this makes it difficult to establish the exact age of the Cascajal block. However, some ceramics, some pottery that were probably associated with it in its original context in the earth may date to about 900 BC. The Cascajal block is carved with a sequence of 28 different signs. 28 different signs that are combined in an inscription length of 62 characters. So these look as if they could be elements in a writing system. They certainly look as if they're writing. But what's significant here, if they are, this is a writing system that is not related to later and far better known Mesoamerican writing systems. It sits there more or less as an isolated find. So further research, and we hope more discoveries, will be needed to clarify the significance of the Cascajel block, to tell us where it sits in the development of writing systems in Mesoamerica more generally. A seal and a plaque with written glyphs, written signs carved into each, have been found at San Andres, a site I've already mentioned, near La Venta in the Olmec heartland, and dated to about 650 BC. Now, there's an important contrast here with the Cascajel block, because the script in use on these artifacts from San Andres resembles that of the later Maya, to the extent that the archaeologists who discovered these items in Olmec territory plausibly interpret the text as the name of a king. So we would see, again, at least commonality in purpose as well, commemoration of rulers. There may be equivalent signs on the stela known as Monument 13 at La Venta as well. So what can we say about this then? It seems likely that between 400 BC and AD 200, writing developed from an Olmec source. And after developing from this Olmec source, in some form, it spread into different areas of Mesoamerica, where different scripts appeared in the Valley of Oaxaca, the Isthmus of Tehuantepec, and the Maya lowlands, where writing seems to have been in very limited use by between 300 and 200 BC, not, unfortunately, to this point, as far as we know, at that extraordinary site of El Mirador. We have to be careful here, though, because we have to think about what we mean by writing. Signs for particular ideas, particular concepts, seem to have existed, for example, at Teotihuacan. In Oaxaca, it doesn't appear that the writing system developed to anywhere near the same extent as among the Maya. The same is true for the Olmec. If the Olmec used signs to convey concepts, they seem to have done it to a far more limited degree than did the Maya. So we may talk about the invention of writing, but in many ways the important issue is, what do people do with it? The Maya developed their writing and calendar systems more extensively than did any other populations in the New World, using it to record important events in the history of their cities, as with those I mentioned above for Tikal, where we can date events down, in some cases, to the day. They used writing to establish the sequence of rituals through the year. And, of course, they used writing to glorify their gods and their rulers. Fair enough. They don't. Maya people do not seem to have used this writing system for more mundane purposes, for accounting, for diplomacy, for the everyday communication within society. No such texts exist, or at least no such texts exist that we have ever found. Maya writing seems to have been primarily a mode of display, a way for members of a tiny literate elite to order their ritual and social worlds. And this may in itself partially explain the very different development of writing in Teotihuacan, among the Olmec, in Oaxaca, and among the Maya. Because if it's being used for these relatively limited purposes, in a sense, I mean, very important for archaeologists, but in a sense, limited purposes that are not having much of an impact on wider society, then perhaps they become more optional. Perhaps it's less necessary for elites to make use of these systems. Keeping these limitations in mind, what does Meyer writing tell us about Mayan political systems? Maya writings reveal that the Maya urban centers, ruled by paramount rulers, most often men but sometimes women, called Kahul Ajau, and the surrounding territories controlled by these rulers and by these urban centers, were the fundamental political unit within the Maya cultural sphere. Within these states, the rulers' close contact with divinity provided both the ritual justification for rule and an ideological axis around which communal identity and communal effort could organize itself. The rulers' initiatives were often justified as reenactments of actions taken by gods and mythical heroes. This ideological center of the state was, of course, expressed materially in monumental architecture, often of staggering complexity, in artwork, and in written claims about the glories of the divinely favored rulers and their ancestors. We might think, then, that the situation in Mesoamerica paralleled that in the Near East. Let's think about this in a broader regional sense for a moment. In the Near East, we have juxtaposed a far-flung Egyptian territorial state organized up and down the Nile. This is juxtaposed against the compact city-states of southern Mesopotamia. If we're making this sort of regional comparison, I suppose in Mesoamerica, Teotihuacan would be the equivalent of Egypt as an influential territorial state, and the Maya city-states would be equivalent to those in southern Mesopotamia. However, this comparison will probably be too simplistic, and not merely because we do not as yet really understand the functioning of the Teotihuacan state. One thing to remember is that Teotihuacan certainly had an urban focus. It was an urban center in a way that dynastic Egypt never had an urban focus. Just as important, the political history of the Maya centers was not simply one of independent city-states. These states, these centers, were almost perpetually in conflict. And it appears from the testimony of Mayan texts that by the middle of the first millennium AD, certain cities were able to dominate their neighbors and so rule large territories. These centers included, at various times, at least Tikal, Karakol, Calakmul, and Copan. So the situation is complex. We thus have to think of a succession of regional states of different sizes attaining control over neighboring territories for a certain period of time, usually not a long period, as particular cities could not sustain such dominance for much more than about a century. So we see the influence of particular cities expand over neighboring areas and neighboring urban centers, but then contract back over cycles that lasted perhaps in some cases a century or so. Each such territory, regional political unit, might abut that of other dominant regional political units, while some neighboring cities would manage to retain their independence. Complex political system, but of course the complexity of this relationship is something that the decipherment of the Maya writing system has allowed us to understand for the first time. So there's where the excitement lies. The gulf between the divine ruler and his lineage, along with other members of the nobility, the gulf between them and the common people seems to have been very great. The lives of commoners have been somewhat invisible in Mayan archaeology in the past, although that's now changing. One significant question for us is what life was like outside the Mayan urban centers, and the degree to which non-elite individuals and communities in rural areas were able to order their lives independently of their rulers, at least on a day-to-day basis. Archaeologists have suggested that these day-to-day relations were organized on more hierarchical principles than the intensely stratified hierarchical social relations that held in the urban centers. To some degree, this is related to our ideas about territorial control in Maya states. To what extent did Maya leaders attempt to control lands away from the immediate areas around urban centers? Should we think of these Maya polities as essentially city-states, where relatively close control was exerted over the majority of the population due to their proximity to the center of government? Or should we instead think of these as more analogous to territorial states, where outlying populations might have significantly more freedom? There's been a good deal of discussion and debate on this issue in Mayan archaeology over the last two decades. There are a number of archaeologists who now see substantial amounts of economic activity, including markets and trading systems, taking place outside the Maya urban centers, especially in rural communities favorably located in relation to different kinds of natural resources, especially those resources that are, if we might put it this way, patchily distributed, available in some places but not in others. This might involve, for example, particularly good sources of stone, salt deposits, and so on. These archaeologists argue from the lack of evidence for central markets and the absence of Mayan writing concerning economic activity, as compared to, for example, Mesopotamia, that elites were not actually controlling a lot of this economic activity, and especially market activity. Now, it's difficult to know how to evaluate this. Markets can be hard to find archaeologically at the best of times, and there are a whole variety of areas where writing doesn't talk very much about economic relations. We could look at Egypt or China, for example. On the other hand, the issue of balance here is, I think, interesting. The idea that we need to take account of the activities and the initiatives of common people. We need to be conscious of this, especially given the obsessive interest of Mesoamerican archaeologists with Mayan elites. Can we conceive of areas of economic activity taking place away from urban centers and not so much under the control of nobles? This is an area of developing research, and one I think that, again, is quite interesting and holds a great deal of promise. Beginning in the 8th century AD, all of this gradually ended. The Maya collapse is often conceived of as an event equivalent to the fall of Rome, but archaeologists argue about what this breakdown of the regional Maya political system actually entailed. We'll examine this question in my next lecture. Thank you.